podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap, Neil Atkinson with Gareth Roberts, Ian Ryan and Josh Sexton, in order to work through this week's set of Liverpool news and what there is to look forward to, which includes a game against FC Wacker, which, Gareth, half an hour games ultimately feels like someone's having a laugh somewhere.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? I like that you put on the agenda, because I also remembered that when Rafa did the three-half game of footy at Newcastle, which was amazing.
It was incredible. In March, I mean, the thing, I could do a full show on the three-half game of footy. It was a three-half game of footy in March, because there was an FA Cup weekend, yeah. And he had a dead weekend, and amazing. He felt he needed the players to play. My favourite thing was Chris Waugh, who covers Newcastle, was doing score updates. And on 115 minutes, Dwight Gayle missed a pen at 2-2. And I just had this image of Dwight Gayle almost being like a broken man. Like, how the fuck has this happened to me, this meaningless thing?
It's mad, isn't it? But I guess what it underlines is that, you know, it's something we say every year and something I think every football fan said forever, that it's a weird time. Like, you're desperate to see the footballers again. You're desperate to watch a bit of club football.
Yeah.
And this sort of isn't that. Do you know what I mean? It's like, we go to them, we watch them, you know, we've gone far afield to do it as well and had some great times, but like, pre-season is pre-season. It's about fitness, it's about getting mentally sharp again, it's about seeing where everyone's at and getting minutes and legs and all that. And so I guess these half an hour games just sort of underline that. But equally, you know, the other side of the business, which I think we are going to be referring to Liverpool a lot as a business today, the other side of the business is, you know, market the fuck out of these games, get everyone to watch them, get everyone on LFC TV, and look, we'll all be doing that, won't we? Because we want to see our players, we want to see where Van Dijk's at, where Gomez is at, what form people are in, are people other than Joel Matip scoring goals, you know what I mean? Things like that.
Absolutely. We will be getting into that. I'm just hugely concerned where these lads are going to get changed. But we will we'll work all of that out over the course of the show. FC Wacker Innsbruck and Stuttgart on Tuesday evening. That is to come, and what we're excited about there. But the show starts off, Ian Ryan, with story that sort of... It doesn't so much break this morning, in that it just sort of gets reported this morning through The Athletic by James Pearce and David Ornstein. It is this question. I think firstly there's the general question that Liverpool have got a lot of contracts that are up in the summer of 2023. And then within that, then, there's been a question obviously recently around Wijnaldum. There's a lot that you can do around chatting about the age profile, and we'll come on to that. But the idea that the Liverpool-Henderson contract situation becomes a thing, which is what this is sort of suggesting might happen, I wasn't entirely prepared for that. I didn't think this one would become a thing. I could see the Mo Salah one possibly becoming a thing. I could even see one with the goalkeeper, who looks like he is just about to sign, maybe becoming a thing. I didn't really see the Henderson one possibly becoming a thing, and yet here we are.
I agree. No, I didn't see it becoming a thing either, and I think how David Ornstein kind of phrased his tweet, I think he said a significant issue or something along those lines, which, you know, does make you wonder a little bit. I'm a little bit surprised, if I'm honest, Neil, because we are talking about, yes, the Liverpool captain, but he is 31 years of age. So I didn't really see it being a problem. And I have to be honest, I thought it would be a case where they'd just offer him maybe an additional year, because, listen, I don't need any kind of edging on when it comes to, you know, giving the owners a bit of stick. People who listen to these shows will know. I've been pretty forthright on my opinion about some of the things FSG have done or haven't done, as the case may be. But I didn't see this one being a massive issue because of the player's age. And I think you've got to take into account the injury record as well. So it never even occurred to me that we'd be thinking about a 4 or 5 year deal here for a 31-year-old. And I don't know what he's asking for, Henderson. I mean, I know one thing. He's been absolutely pivotal to the success on the pitch. And he can have a wider conversation about the things he does off the pitch. There's no doubt he's just a fantastic fella. You can tell that. It shines through. Whether it's people from within the club talking about him, or you listen to people talk about him from the England camp and the England manager, there's no doubt what he does off the pitch is invaluable at times. But what he's done on the pitch for Liverpool has been nothing short of brilliant. And I think he's been one of those figures that has divided opinion over the course of his time. And I don't just mean the early stuff under Brendan. Even when he was playing under Klopp, a lot of fans just weren't having Henderson. And I've always been one who's absolutely had him, because I think what he offers the team, you can't really underplay it, to be honest. I think he's been nothing short of brilliant. And it would be a worry if he left, but then you also have to think about, well, where would he go? sometimes I think footballers suit clubs, and I think Jordan Henderson suits Liverpool Football Club down to the ground in terms of what he needs to do as a player. The off-the-pitch stuff, which I've mentioned, but I don't see an obvious route out for him if he was to leave Liverpool. I have to say that, and I wouldn't be
the
in a massive...
piece mentioned Pochettino and PSG.
I don't see it, maybe, possibly, but I don't see that as a natural thing. I mean, what you might say is because of the injuries he's had, maybe there'll come a time where in Henderson's head he's thinking, I've got to slow it down a little bit. Maybe there's a different league that will lend itself better to me in terms of being fit and being able to stay fit. Because that's the worry with Jordan. It's not about what he brings in terms of ability, because I think everyone now, and I mean everyone, is pretty much on board with what he does for this Liverpool team. But you have to factor in, when you think about contract negotiations and length of contract, you've got to think about the injuries.
Within there, it's interesting because the piece sort of frames that Henderson at times, Josh, worries that he's not actually given the thing that Ian says goes without saying. It feels a little bit like Henderson would like it to actually be said. All that's indicated that he'd like to sort of feel as though that's there is importance to this side. I think there's a... For me, there's an importance to him before you get onto that sort of wider importance around his ability to force the issue. To play as per the plan, but to create and control chaos and to force the issue. I always feel the quintessential Henderson sort of contribution to a Liverpool attack. You see it away at Norwich in the February of 2020, when it's been a horrible game, it's a horrible day, Liverpool could just do with getting out. And he creates this little weird up and under that leads to Mane producing an astonishing bit of control, don't get me wrong, the glory in the goal is Mane, but it's Henderson who creates this slightly unorthodox situation that everyone's got to deal with. And that's what I think he does brilliantly for this Liverpool side when he's at his best, is he creates chaos and then he controls it in Liverpool's favour, and that's his skill. And for me, that's something which I think he got to see last season when he wasn't playing in the middle of the park, exactly how much we missed that in its absence.
Yeah, he's so important to this side. I think he's, you could probably make the argument that he's in the top three most important players in the side, maybe behind Virgil and the goalie. You could maybe even make an argument that Salah's in there somewhere, but the four of them, I would say, are the sort of the pillars of this Liverpool side. So that's what sort of makes this so strange to me. I don't know whether I'm overstating it to sort of say that it feels like there's no sort of sentiment left in football these days with these kinds of things, because the Gini Ronaldo one, I sort of found that tough anyway as a fan, because Gini Ronaldo's just one of my favourite players. He's done so much for this club, and I think in some of these cases there has to, you surely think there's got to be a bit of room for sentiment, and Liverpool in particular is a club that sells itself on that idea that it's, you know, it's a bit more than a club, it's rooted in the community, the fans are so important, and yet there's these players who Liverpool fans love. Jordan Henderson's another Liverpool fans love, and it feels like there's not sort of willing to be any wiggle room on the business side of things, as Robbo referred to before. And it's not like we're talking about here, when I talk about the sentiment, we're not talking about like a, you know, a 33, 34 year old Jamie Carragher who's slightly over the hill and is not the first choice centre half anymore and that kind of thing. We're talking about a lad who's really, really important to what Liverpool do in Liverpool's system. And the idea that the club could sort of let him walk away and try and recoup some kind of fee for him is strange, to be honest, because you never really sat down to consider at any point that Jordan Henderson's Liverpool career may end in the way that it could now end up finishing. You almost thought, you know, I remember being on the pre-season tour in America and actually asking Klopp the question about what he sees for Jordan Henderson after his career, and Klopp was sort of saying, well, his door would always be open for him to be coaching Liverpool and that kind of thing, because that was the route you saw it taken. Then all of a sudden for the club to be suggesting that might not be the case, to be suggesting that there may be, you know, Henderson leaving on a transfer is just bizarre.
We've seen and heard the wider importance of him beyond the playing ability, Gareth, which shouldn't be overlooked, especially in the empty grounds. There's the captain of captains element, but there is an issue for Liverpool around players growing old together. You know, there's the idea of let the legs go on someone else's watch, mm-hmm. isn't new. It's not Gordon or Edwards as Maxim, it's Bob Paisley's. So there is a validity to the question, I think it is fair to say, about what sort of length of contract he gives someone who'll be 33 at the end of the one that he's currently on. That is a valid place to be. But that said, I feel, maybe you feel otherwise, but I feel that Henderson has been improving. His experience and leadership hasn't just helped those around him, I think it's helped him. I think he's played his best football for Liverpool across the last three seasons.
Yeah, I think with all this, like the piece we're all talking about uses the word uncertainty, and I just wonder whether that's the problem. Like, if you're saying there is a policy per se about 30 plus year old players, well, maybe that needs to be communicated more clearly then, because I think there's an assumption that there is, but equally you've got Milner sitting there proving that there isn't, sort of thing. And with Henderson and with Ewing, yeah, you know, his form's been absolutely fine. Okay, he mentioned the injury issue before, which is a thing. I'd also say as well, his play at his best for me is when he's high intensity. So how long can he be high intensity for? He's got 2 years left on his contract now. That'll take him to 33. He will have done 10 years plus for the club. He will have played 400 plus games for the club. There will be a time where he drops off. Mm. That happens to everyone, and ultimately it's a young man's game. On the other hand, though, I would say that I think you're seeing more examples now of players living the right way for a long time and then therefore being able to play a little longer, because we know that Henderson doesn't drink, he looks after himself, he's part of that crew that really looks after himself, if you like. So there is the possibility, and it seems to be coming from him as well, that he thinks, you know, I'm absolutely fine, what's going on here? I wonder as well, like, the piece is interesting in, like, I'm always interested in how pieces are written, where they've got information from and stuff like that. And there's a lot of stuff in there which is sort of like, Henderson wants this or doesn't want that, and Henderson wants to feel this. And but then it also says about, you know, how club medical staff have been so impressed by him coming back from his injury. It also makes clear in the piece that Klopp loves him, but this isn't down to him. And I just wonder a little bit about it, because if you look at this situation now that we've became aware of this morning, if you look at the Wijnaldum situation, if you look at how long it took to sign a centre-half in January, for me there's the first signs a little bit here in Klopp's reign of maybe a bit of beef with the owners, with the way it's being run. It's made clear in the thing that it's not Klopp making these decisions, and I sort of get why you draw a line, because Klopp managers, I think, a lot on emotion, and he's got everyone in line, they all love him, they love working with him, and if there's this clear mark that this isn't him, it's them, big bad them in their office, then that allows them to keep up the idea that I'm one of you boys, I'm with you, I've got your back. But equally, I do just wonder, I don't think Klopp had ever come out, I don't think it's in his nature to come out and absolutely throw anyone under the bus ever, really. But I do just wonder if there are little hints here of a bit of beef.
I'll come back to you on this, because I think what I think is interesting is, off the back of this and the Wijnaldum thing, it feels like this is the bit that's done to Klopp rather than the bit he leads on. And yeah, I think this is a really interesting, like, he's gone out of his way to say, transfers, I've got final say. I'm not the only person in the room, but I've got final say. He's absolutely gone out of his way to say that. And around the Wijnaldum thing, he very much went out of his way to say nothing. In that he very much went out of his way to not say that I've got final say, not to say whether or not the contract for Genie's down to you. And it might be, I wonder if this may well almost be that Klopp himself is like, I've got to leave this bit to someone else because I've got to stay close to the boys. So this bit's got to come to somebody else. Yeah. But it is an interesting thing in that one and the other are interrelated. You know what I mean? It is literally who's going to be playing football for you next year.
It's hard. It's back to the idea that this is hard. I think we talked on one fairly recently where we were saying, all of this is hard, all of this is difficult, and when a lad has played for you for 10 years and been through the emotional journey that he's been through and then eventually lifted a European Cup, a Premier League, a Club World Cup and everything else, and been pivotal to all of that, then of course there's an emotional attachment, and we as fans look at it with that emotional attachment, mostly, I would say more the more business-headed, who, you know, the more business-obsessive is crunching the numbers, is looking at, well, you know, is he worth X? What happens at the end of that contract? Will he start to, I think it's Paul Tompkins who always uses the analogy of players melting, you know, and so are you just left with a pool of water at the end of this other contract with no way of moving him on for anything and therefore getting nothing back? Again, even to that, though, there's a counter argument. He's done 10 years, blah, 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 blah. Loyalty, emotion, all that kind of thing. So it really is difficult putting the two things together, the business side of the club, the emotional side of the club, the way Klopp manages and the way he has everyone on board. It's not easy.
It's not easy. Souness was 31 when he went to Sampdoria. Ian arguably has his best season playing for Liverpool, 83-84, and then moves that summer. Goes in playing the European Cup final for Liverpool, knowing that it's his last game for the club. And as I say, he was 31. For me, I'm completely with Gareth on the intensity point around Henderson. That's when he plays his best stuff, and that you do worry at some point that obviously that can't sustain. That said, it feels to me as though if at the minute, in the way football currently operates, if there's an area of the pitch where people are able to have greater longevity. It appears that the middle of the park is still there. Modric's still doing the business. Toni Kroos is around Henderson's age. There's a few others where it doesn't feel as though the ticking clock ticks quite as quickly.
Possibly, yeah. I think that's fair. But I do think it depends on the players you're talking about. And, you know, I take the point around Souness when he left. And I think it was a different time then. And I think Liverpool as a club had this thing where, and I'm not saying they wanted Souness to go because he didn't, but when he got to 30, there's a number of players that Liverpool shifted on, probably a little bit too early, to be honest. Even go back to Paris, Jimmy Case and people like that, they went a little bit too soon. But there was a policy back then. It has shifted now in terms of, you know, players are able to perform to a higher level. But I think Robbo's point's right. When Jordan's at his absolute best, he is able to get about the pitch and he is able to force play and he is able to dictate. And some of that will take, you know, energy and intensity, and those things naturally will start to fall off a little bit as you get a bit older. So I can totally understand why the club wouldn't be rushing out to give him a 4 or 5 year deal. I can totally see why they wouldn't be doing that, but that's not to downplay how important he is right now. I suppose my issue, Neil, when we start to think about player contracts, it feels like there's a narrative now coming out that Liverpool are going to tie certain players down or aim to tie certain players down, and that's going to be the focus this summer, and therefore what's not going to be the focus is bringing in new players. And that worries me, because this team, the squad, whilst it's a very, very good squad, it still needs new players. It still needs to evolve. It still needs to be challenged in certain areas of the pitch. And if that is what they're going to do, if they are going to just focus on 1 or 2, 3, 4 contracts, and it might not be Jones by the sounds of it, and just do them, whilst that's important, and you've got to tie them down because they've been crucial and critical to the success, you've still got to evolve. All the best teams have got to add bits of quality to challenge those players who have been great. But let's be honest, now and again, 1 or 2 through the season might rest on the laurels. They might have a spell where they're not quite at it, and they've got to be pushed. And I would include the captain in that. But that said, you know, if Henderson was to walk out the door tomorrow, I'd be gutted, because he is critical. And you put something in your agenda. When he plays, this Liverpool team is better. It's better. I don't think that can be debated, to be honest. When he's in the team, more often than not, that has a positive impact on how Liverpool play, and the results that Liverpool get is reflected by when he plays the football match, when he's involved. So you wouldn't want to see him out the door right now. But if he was to leave in 2 or 3 years' time, I mean, there is an argument to say, you know, the best of Jordan Henderson may well be behind him.
There is, Josh, just to sort of run through those contracts, and then we'll come back into the transfer conversation there from Ian. Henderson's out of contract, Firmino, Van Dijk, Salah, Mane, and Fabinho, and Alisson are all contracts expiring in the summer of 2023. I think Alisson might actually be one more year on there, but Liverpool look as though they're about to wrap him up until 2026. Then from there, there's other footballers that I haven't named. Shaqiri's one who may well move on this summer. Gruwich that summer as well. Wilson is also in there. And then there's the couple of slightly more question marky in the gaps between those two categories. The first category of people Liverpool will be desperate to keep hold of, one would imagine, and the others who are likely departures, there's Oxlade Chamberlain and Naby Keita. It is a lot of work to be done from a Liverpool point of view. I mean, we'll come back, it shouldn't preclude transfer activity. I'd like to think there's people at the club who can do more than one thing at once. But the flip side of this is that Liverpool do need to have a policy and a plan for those contracts, and this slight delay over the Henderson thing might actually be part of that policy and plan.
Yeah, and you wonder how much of it is COVID affected as well. I know there's been a bit of a thing with a few of Liverpool's footballers in recent times, with I'm sure it was a Nike thing, where Nike was sort of waiting to ride COVID out a little bit and see where it took them, and it meant that a few of the contracts for their footballers were up in the air. I know Andy Robertson, I think, has changed over to Adidas. There was a time where Thiago was sort of spotted training in Adidas boots and stuff like that, and you just wonder whether, if you are trying to sort of consider the business side of this, whether that has been a consideration for Liverpool, and maybe they've just left it a bit too long. But you'd sort of want the club to be smarter in these situations, I think, as well, and you know, not leave just a heap of footballers' contracts to be expiring. Then I was speaking to Ian before the show started, and we referenced a sort of Crystal Palace example, how they came into this summer
with an extreme example.
Exactly, that's what I mean. Like, you don't want the club to be like Crystal Palace, but Crystal Palace came into the summer with a load of expiring contracts, and you wonder how much that was a sort of a COVID situation that they got themselves into there. I know a lot of those footballers are sort of have had their time at Palace as well, and they probably can be seen to be moved on. But this is the sort of only consideration I can make from the business side of things to why Liverpool have left so many of these footballers to be now, you know, 2 summers away from their contracts expiring.
The idea, Gareth, that there's going to be a hold on transfers is layered in a little bit. I still think as part of this, there is an overall expectation, I think, around Liverpool that comes in prior to a lot of summers that Liverpool are going to do 6 or 7, and then they're going to do 4, maybe 3, maybe 4. What the value of those 3 or 4 are is up in the air. I think that's something that still remains to be seen from this summer. I'm expecting Liverpool, if they do the remaining 2, to have to spend relatively big money because they need to get players in who can genuinely come and be first team players to push people, as Ian says. But that still does need to happen. You know, Liverpool do not want to go into this season light in any area of the pitch, and at the moment you are looking at it concerned legitimately that you can have a chat about Jordan Henderson in centre midfield, but I tell you what, it'll only strengthen his negotiating position if he gets 33 starts next summer.
Exactly that. And look, you know, talked about Curtis before, haven't we, saying, you know, it's an opportunity for him this summer, but, you know, equally you want someone in who's a little bit more experienced than him as well, who can challenge him midfield. It does seem fairly accepted, I would say, among, like, it can feel a little bit doom and gloom around the transfers at the moment that we're not going to do any. Obviously, Percy wrote his piece that seems to just say every single player we've ever been linked with, nah, we're not getting him. And there was the reaction according. But I think also, if you look around that, people who, you know, generally can be trusted to report, you know, fairly factual stuff around him, but it seems accepted from what I've seen that we are trying our best to buy a midfielder and a young forward. So that I think is the bare minimum, and I think that's what they're trying to do. In terms of actual names and saying anything publicly, I just think they're keeping the cards close to the chest. They've been doing that for a long time now. That's the way they operate. I don't think we should expect anything different, really. And I think there's a bit of a standoff generally in the market. I think everyone's sort of waiting to see what everyone else
is doing. It's a bit mad, isn't it? I was sort of looking at this over the weekend when I had a bit of time. I was a bit, you know, Villa have moved a fair bit. Palace have just done a little bit of interesting stuff. Everton are buying ancient wingers. there is, that might bite me. I think Damari Gray is a good player, actually. There is, you know, but my point is more, I'm sort of looking at, so yeah, I say Villa have done a little bit, but there appears to me to be this really weird, what's this summer actually all about thing going on, where no one maybe knows and everyone's scared they're going to get burned?
Yeah, I think that is a thing, and I think it could hot up sort of before, you know, by the end of the window, when dominoes start to fall, really, because we've got the situation again, haven't we, where actual footy starts getting played before the window's closed, which is mad. I thought we were sorting that out, but anyway. But yeah, I think players will start to shift, players will start to move. I think Liverpool are putting it out there that they won't have the kecks off in terms of fees. You know, that is PR, that is communication control, all of these like fees that look slightly over the odds for the players concerned. That to me is just a message to everyone. I think we assume sometimes that there's like loads and loads of other information kicking around in the football world sort of behind the scenes, and sometimes I think maybe there isn't. Like I think, you know, clubs will read the stuff we read for clues as much as we do, really. And so when they see that big list of players Liverpool are let go and they see the fees next to them, it might sow a seed one way or the other. So we'll see. I think Liverpool do business. I think they do shift some players out. I think that long list of players to prepare to let go is too long for no one to go, if you know what I mean.
And for me, the big marker on this is, if they weren't confident of shifting a couple of overseas players out, then it's absolutely insane to give the goalkeeper the contract. Literally is like, it's genuine what on earth was going on there. It's months and months of internal investigation as to what was going on there. I think they must have a confidence to shifting a couple out. And on that, I am expecting to do business. I want to come back to the type of business, Ian, but Gareth's point there about the market, I think, is really interesting. I think one of the things that is making it odd, beyond just the COVID thing, and everyone says to me, why does COVID only affect Liverpool? And I really don't think that's true at all. I think COVID's affecting everyone. And there's the big loss of the pressure valves. So often one of the things that sparks things in the market is Italy. Italian clubs might do everything or two. And at the minute, Juventus and Inter, for instance, are in massive financial issues. You've got Barca and Real Madrid, who are just in looked both being an absolute mess, Barca especially. Munich have basically gone, we're finished. We're happy, we're just going to go with what we've got. I think a lot of the pressure valves at that sort of top of the market have just completely disappeared. And I think that that's that's leading, I think, to it all being a bit stagnant and ultimately a bit weird.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think how you frame that in terms of, you know, Barca and Real Madrid and Bayern Munich as well, you almost expect those massive clubs to be going out and doing stuff, and we know because of the situation in Spain. I mean, Barcelona, I mean, fucking hell, you could do a week of shows on them. I mean, it's absolute carnage what's going on over there. So you can't see that domino effect coming from, say, Spain, for instance. Now, Real Madrid...
And France is in crisis too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Real Madrid do always seem to find a way of doing something. You know, Robbo always talks about this. You know, they seem to find a little dance where they can, you know, sell something for loads of money, then go and buy a player. So maybe there's still something like that about to happen.
Whacking a couch on Craigslist, that sort of thing.
But you mentioned Bayern Munich there as well. So that kind of trickle effect, we yet to see that. And that has been the Euros as well. And, you know, I know people might say, well, you can still get things done. Well, you have to understand, a lot of players don't want to do anything. They don't want to even think about transfers whilst they're focusing on the tournament, because that is their sole focus. So I think you will start to see a bit of movement now, whether it's Liverpool or not. I'm not too sure. Robbo mentioned the thing there about some of the player fees. And people keep saying, well, it's too high, but you have got to start somewhere. And I think it's fine to start high as long as you've got the kind of ability to shift on those prices when you need to, because you might not get 10 or 12 million for Wilson. You might not get 15 for Divock Origi. In fact, I'm almost certain you won't, given what we've seen over the last 18 months. So you might have to be prepared to kind of shift some of these players on for very, very little money. But then you've got to think about, well, does that impact on what's coming through the door? In Liverpool's case, and where I'm concerned, Neil, is it almost certainly does feel like what they shift will have or will be a consequence of what they can bring in. That's where you get a little bit nervous.
The other part of this, going to bring it round into the actual players themselves in a minute, Josh, but the other part of this is the overseas player issue, which is the not just the part of the being a ticking clock for getting them out the door from a Liverpool point of view on the cash flow side, which is Ian's point, it's also the overseas players thing. I think part of what that actually does is it makes clubs feel as though they're in a, and maybe literally puts them in a stronger negotiating position with Liverpool anyway, and all of these factors are in play. Liverpool, as it stands, do have 18 players who will be in and around an expectation of being registered as overseas players. You're only allowed to do 17. It means that before Liverpool can do one, two theoretically have got to leave, unless Liverpool are just going to have the attitude of no, we'll get it sorted.
I think that must be the case, mustn't it? You mentioned the Adrian one, and that almost doesn't make any sense unless Liverpool have a plan around all this. But, you know, like you say, if you know, Marco Grujic, he is one of the players on that list that needs to be shifted. If I'm Porto and Liverpool are hard-lining on 15 million, then I'm Porto and I'm saying, well, I'll wait to the end of the window because I know exactly what needs to happen at your club for Marco Grujic to leave. And we might be one of the only teams who's come to the table with a genuine bid. And I get the feeling that football clubs would know that sort of thing, sort of within the businesses and with agents and stuff as well. So you've got to sort of presume in this scenario that Liverpool are sort of been savvy with the business side of it. But it does become a worry, and it particularly becomes a worry, you know, when you see all the names of Liverpool being linked with, because, you know, even we talked about Ismail Assar on one of the good shows the other day, and you don't sort of consider the fact that he's not a homegrown player, even though he's coming from a sort of a British team, he's coming from the Championship and stuff. And then you have to decide whether, you know, it's good business to bring in someone like him, or whether you're actually better off giving Harvey Elliott a chance. And they'll have all sorts of considerations to make around that sort of thing. You know, I was fuming that the club weren't looking at Ozan Kabak genuinely for 8 million, but then a lot of people made the very good point that actually Nat Phillips makes loads more sense since he's already on your books and he's homegrown and Ozan Kabak's not. So you sort of presume that Liverpool have got a way out of this, and you presume there is some sort of at least a break glass for loans situation, as you've seen over the past sort of couple of years with a few of those lads.
The other option, Josh, is the idea of twisting a little bit more with the ins. So there was really interesting Camavinga links that just sort of popped up last 24 hours, where the thing about Camavinga is he's at Ron. There's Ron? No, I'm not sure. There's, apologies. There is 1 year left of his deal. He wouldn't need to be registered because of his age. That ultimately, if they're under 21, the overseas players, they no longer need to be registered. And I was just sort of wondering about that. It's similar agents involved to Canate as well. And it just sort of made me think Liverpool might choose, in order to almost relieve the pressure on these negotiations in terms of people having the attitude that you've just sort of said, Liverpool may well, there may be nothing wrong with them being creative on one, and by that either buying a player who will be able to be registered as homegrown, or alternatively one where they can dodge the question, at least in this window, and clear the decks a little bit.
Yeah, and I suppose that then gives you the option as well for someone with higher resale value down the line. That would sort of seem like smart business, but it doesn't really alleviate the issue of the lads that you have got on your books that you are looking to shift. You know, I mentioned Marco Grich, one of them. It's obviously Tai Iwo, the lad who's never got a work permit at Liverpool. Looks like he'll never play a game for Liverpool before they sort of sell him unless he plays one of these mad pre-season games against Wacker. So
big 30 against Wacker in his near future.
Big 30 against Wacker to add another $6 million onto his value in the club's eyes. Look, Liverpool have got to shift some of those lads, and particularly, you know, the sort of fringe lads are the ones I'm looking at as well, the Shaqiris and the Rigis, who you could argue for, you know, the point I made at the top of the show, where there's maybe an argument to keep those lads around if there's not a better move for them, just purely out of sentiment. But it does feel like at some point Liverpool are going to have to do the smart business thing with those lads in particular, because their value is not going up while they're not playing games for Liverpool. They're still sat on the fringes and they're still taking up non-homegrown spots, sorry. So it feels like at some point something has to give with a few of these lads.
Something has to give. Elsewhere there was the strangeness, so there's Camavinga, that's just sort of come on for the first time really in months. Liverpool were connected to him a lot in January and February. He's a very exciting young talent. I'd be surprised if Liverpool weren't, but a lot of exciting young talents move without Liverpool's involvement, Ian, and that's literally how football works. Saul, though, is interesting in that it felt like there was some sort of really weird diddle Barcelona were trying to do around Griezmann, and doing a little bits and pieces there and getting him in. It looks like that's, I don't see how it isn't doomed to failure. Even when people were saying it looks like he's going to go to Barcelona, I was a bit like, it just makes no sense to me as to how this is even slightly possible. And I do wonder that one, it feels like a link that is continuing unabated, in that it feels like he is going somewhere. And when we do the thing that we just did before, where we go through the Italians, we cross them out. We go through Munich, we cross it out. We go through another three or four, we cross stuff out. There aren't actually that many places left for him to go.
No, I that was one, and I think I said something similar on a gutter last week. That's one where you could connect the dots and see how he finds himself at Liverpool. And I still think, no, it might happen. I mean, you've mentioned there was the narrative last week that the Barca thing was looking nailed on. But you do start to look at it and think, well, is that going to work? You can see why.
It's likes, awful maths.
And how you can see why the likes of Griezmann and maybe the players would be up for it. I mean, Griezmann's not at the best of times at Barcelona, so maybe he's thinking, well, yeah, I'll happily go back there. But in terms of the numbers and stuff, yeah, not so sure. In terms of the type of player he is, you could see how he comes in and does a job for Liverpool Football Club, no doubt about it. I think he suffered with a little bit of maybe loss of form in the last 12 months. I mean, I've not been across all of his games, so, you know, the people be out there, you can correct me on that. But he didn't make the squad, did he, for the Euros, which maybe tells you where he was, either form or fitness-wise. But I like the player, the bits I've seen, absolutely. We've obviously had a close-up look at him when he's played against us in the Champions League. I always came back to the Bissouma one, Neil, to be honest. I always felt that might be the one that's the most gettable for Liverpool, in terms of his price tag. You know, if Liverpool go knocking on Brighton's door, yes, they want to keep the player, but inevitably, you know, that player probably ends up leaving.
The Ben White deal, I don't think, helps Liverpool in that regard.
It might not do, and maybe Bissouma goes the following summer. I think with Bissouma, he's got a high ceiling. Whether he'd be ready to come in and play in Liverpool's first team straight away, I'm not too sure. He looks like a lad who maybe needs another 12 months of fairness. But that said, it just wouldn't have surprised me if that's where Liverpool had landed and Bissouma had been the one that come through the door. And I know it's been knocked back by a number of journalists, but let's be honest, they're fucking knocking them all back. So, I
mean, and Thiago was knocked back endlessly last summer.
Exactly. So at some point, someone will walk through the door. So I felt it might be him, but I have to say, I mean, if you can go and get Sal, that would be one that I think people would sit up and take notice. And it does just mean Liverpool fans as well. If you're a fan of another club, if he comes through the door, you know what he's done in his kind of past years. You know, forget about last season where maybe he's tailed off a little bit. That is one that makes you sit up and go, yeah, they mean business by bringing him in.
It would be a big one, that one, Gareth, if they were to pull it out the bag. You said before about expecting somebody in. For me, he feels like the right sort of profile. I think Liverpool may well want someone who can play a little more responsibly, frankly. Yeah. That's the Wijnaldum replacement move that I feel is on the card. You mentioned Jones before as well. I think that they feel as though that he could be that man. You said also about a young forward. There remains links constantly with Liverpool. It's literally part of the job, that is going to happen. I think it is Bissouma as well, throwing them all sort of in the hat. This is, Liverpool are going to talk everything down, I think, until the moment that they're doing something, and I think that's the thing that we all need to remember.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we said it a number of times, since the Van Dijk debacle and having to put apologies on your own website and stuff like that and looking a bit daft.
It's just a change of policy.
I think since then they thought, well, right, let's lock down. Because the other thing that, you know, saying the same to one of my mates when we were chatting about this yesterday, I was saying, you know, like, people treat 40 as though, like, it's people reporting on Watergate or something. But, like, it's 40. And, like, no one in 40 has to tell you the truth at any point. It's not a court case. They're not putting their hand on a Bible. You know, they can do what they want. And, like, if they think it's not in their interest to put something in the public domain, then they're well within their rights to do that. Equally, they might put stuff in the public domain that's bullshit because it works for them. I know agents certainly do that. That's gone on for years. It will continue to go on. And now there's even more people willing to put it out there in the public domain. There's literally websites dedicated to transfer bullshit with no substance whatsoever to it. So, yeah, I absolutely think they are going to do something. If it's Sal, I would be happy with that one. I like the idea that he's a bit more experienced than other lads who got on the books and other lads who've been linked with. As you say, I think as well, you can just see something there that adds up on it, because you look at all his stats over a number of years and he's seemingly always fit, always playing, always in the first team, looks like a reliable player on the basis of that alone. It seems maybe something's gone on between him and the manager, and the manager started picking him a bit less. He's bought another lad in, I think, from Udinese. And so all of a sudden, the writing's on the wall, because once upon a time, not long ago, they were giving him a 9-year contract and he's still got 5 left, which is madness. But they only seemingly want 30-odd million for him. So that says to me, we'll let him go for a bit of a cut price. It gets us out of this contract situation, because they're another club that could do with some dough. So it ticks a lot of boxes. I hate the way, though, like, and this is me contradicting myself, I know it's all bullshit, but I still hate the way when we get linked to someone, the next day United or City are linked to them. It's like, can they just fuck off for a bit and let us have a transfer target that they go on as well? Do you know what I mean? Because, you know, like the latest ones I read about Sal over the weekend, it was like all of a sudden, you know, United are interested now as well.
It's why I always loved the Naby Keita one, when no one else was ever getting Naby Keita. It was dead easy. Even when we weren't getting them, we were still getting them.
Yeah,
you could relax.
It was sorted.
He makes sense for United, so well, actually, to be fair, Josh.
Yeah, there is an argument he does. I think he makes loads of sense for Liverpool, which is why it's one that I really like the sort of sound of. You know, Ian mentioned Bissouma before, and Bissouma feels like, for me, a move which potentially snookers Liverpool again down the line. It comes back to the versatility question, Neil, and we've obviously spoken a lot on a few of these shows over the summer about the fullback question in particular, and Saul's done a bit of fullback for Atletico. It's probably more of a sort of wing-back type situation than it is a genuine fullback, but I'd argue that that's what Liverpool's fullbacks do anyway. The job they're expected to do. So in that sense, I think he makes loads of sense for us. Whether he makes loads of sense for United is not sort of for me to decide, as someone who watched very little of United the last season and has particularly little interest in what they get up to next season as well, because I feel like they're not much of our business. There's just been a joicy alarm, by the way, Neil. Oof. That Everton are interested in Dwight McNeil as well, so maybe they've heard your agent Winger shout and gone, oh, how about this,
watch this, watch us go, big ball of Dwight McNeil.
I've seen the joicy alarm and genuinely thought there's going to be some big transfer news that breaks it, and it's just Everton.
But the frustration, or for me sometimes, is you've just mentioned there, Neil, he'd be perfect for United as well. And yeah, you can absolutely make a case for that. But if you're a player, and I know, listen, you can't get away from the fact United are a huge club, but at this moment in time, you look at who's the manager of that club and who's the manager of our club, and that is a thing for players. They want to know who they're playing for. They want to know who's calling the shots. They want to know who's going to get the best out of them. And this is where I get frustrated, because there's such an opportunity, and we know we've had the COVID thing and you've got to factor that in, but there is an opportunity to make hay here while the sun shines, because you've got this manager. Because let's have it right, everyone, and I mean everyone, would want to play for him. Maybe there's the odd player that doesn't fancy it, but let's be honest, most of them would.
Yep.
Because he's got that standard in the game. You've only got to listen to how other players speak about him. They all want to play for this manager because of what he is, what he stands for, how he gets the best out of people, how he's able to kind of, you know, probably get more out of players. And obviously we've seen it with Liverpool, where sometimes you think, fucking hell, I mean, I didn't see that lad's trajectory from what we bought him to what he's been turned into. So my worry is, and I've mentioned it on other shows, when this manager's not here, that's when I'd start to panic. If these owners are still there, because the model that they ask Klopp to work under is a really challenging one. where you've got a shift to bring in. And that's not always the case, they have to do that, but you can see, you can join it up and see that's how it does work across lots of the seasons when he's been in charge. So let him have, maybe go a little bit balls out sometimes, and maybe go and bring one in when you haven't shifted them, to show the loyalty to the manager, because he's earned it. Fucking hell, he's earned it. And as I say, he won't be here forever. Maybe another 3 years and that's it. So whilst you've got him here, there's an unbelievable chance for Liverpool to go and stake a claim for more league titles, for more European Cups. But you've got to fucking back this guy, because he's the best in the business. And I've said it before, put anyone else in charge, they don't get the same return as this manager does. So make the most of him while you've got him.
Okay. Into the pre-season games then this week. The 30 minutes are berserk. FC Wacker Innsbruck, the spirit of Scouse, reference there to the panorama from the early 60s. Do Google it if you've never seen it. It is worth looking at.
Awesome.
And then Stuttgart for 30 minutes as well, immediately afterwards. Oxlade-Chamberlain's getting the Lallana shout, what I call the Lallana. His was the best one. There's other examples Liverpool's done in the past where they've said, oh yeah, that player could play that position, we're working on it loads. The player comes out, he gives a couple of comments, suggests it's all happening, and then Lallana played there for a game against Aston Villa, did a little bit in the League Cup, and then as soon as Fabinho got injured, Henderson played there. And that is my thing on this, but the Chamberlain could play through the middle is a little bit of a thing that's getting knocked around. Danny Ward was number one, by the way, for 20 minutes.
What a
20 minutes for Danny Ward. Didn't really recover from it until he was in Gulf of Wales this summer.
No.
There is what to look out for in these pre-season games, Gareth, what to look forward to as well, the 2:30 minutes and then the longer one against Mainz on Friday. Liverpool will be looking, I think, to just to sort of see where some players are up to, and I think that the main thing we're all looking forward to is seeing elite centre-halves, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think we all enjoyed that clip, didn't we, of seeing Joel, you know, running his way through and sticking it in the corner. And by the way, you know me, I love a rant about people being dickheads in the way that they create media. Jesus Christ, turning that into a piece about how Mo was fuming with the new centre-half.
That, but also, there's two sides to this one, Robert. It drove me mad, and I'm really pleased you mentioned it. I hated that. I also hated the... people who support us or who go, oh, you can see Mo there, he's a real winner. Honestly, I play fucking 7-a-side or 5-a-side with Josh Sexton, and if he fucks up, I'm fucking furious. Yeah. And it happens all the time.
Exactly.
So, you know, I'm pulling my jersey and livid. If anyone's like, oh yeah, and trust me, I'm not as good as Mo Salah. That's not what makes you a real winner, being angry because someone's been a bit shit when you've conceded a goal on 5-a-side.
It's not a story, is it?
Honestly, I put one in the top bin the other day and Michael Manning was shouting at me to track back. Fucking prick.
Good on him. Good on him. Well, you don't.
It's not a story, though, is it? And it just made me laugh. But
they really, really worked the content minds for that one, I thought. Sent the canary down.
But the clip was boss, though. And you know, seeing Matip like playing like that was fantastic. I love the way as well, like, that prompted like more positive shouts, to be fair. But again, it's the same thing. Like, one little clip, and it's like, boom, on social. You know, like, so seeing, like, lads saying, all right, don't shoot the messenger here, but Joel is a potential defensive midfielder, yeah, and all this. He's played there before, but I don't think so, mate. But yeah, seeing him back, seeing Virgil back, seeing Joe Gomez back, seeing where they're all at, it does seem that Joel is ahead of the other two in terms of his progress, what we've heard so far. But, you know, seeing that with your own eyes in a 30-minute game against Wacker or whatever. What you said as well about positions, it is the time of year where mad stuff happens sometimes and they try things. Remember Pepe Reina in midfield? I don't think we're going to see that, but no. You know what I mean? It is one where, you know, the management team might experiment with one or two things where you might see some of these kids that you've heard lots about and things like that. We all want to see where Harvey Elliott is at, I would have thought. I know I certainly do. Thought it was interesting that Klopp's saying, like, Klopp, you can tell in his interviews currently, is desperate not to create a story around anything. So he almost felt like he was reluctant to talk about Harvey. But equally, he did say, you know, you can read between the lines, he says he's taken a step from that loan. He says he looks incredibly fit. So, you know, there's two things straight away then, which says to me, well, he's going to be good then, do you know what I mean? So I'm looking forward to seeing him as well. And just generally just seeing our lads in the kit, competing against someone, whether it's for 30 minutes, whether it's in Austria, whatever it is, you know, it will be fantastic to have that back.
There'll be post-match shows. We're going to try and do post-match audio in between the two games with the stopwatch on. We're also going to hot mic them as they come as well. So we're looking forward to all of that is to come. So hot mic for that. Also, ping immediate reaction from both of them, and obviously longer stuff after the one against Mainz. All of that to come, and do subscribe if you haven't done already. theanfieldrap.com/subscribe. Download the app, and you can also subscribe through YouTube for the fabulous video content. Josh, as someone who watches the younger players, is there anyone we should have our eyes on who's gone on that 34-man squad who may well grab our attention in these couple of matches?
I think it's always tough in pre-season, isn't there? Because you always sort of get a couple who put in really good performances, and it's going to be particularly hard, I think, with the little 30-minute games, because there'll be a few lads there who just play their absolute hearts out. But there's a couple of just really tidy footballers in the academy at the moment. It's because that sort of imprint of Liverpool's like tactical setup is like a stick of rock through the whole club, really. So there's lads like Conor Bradley who I think could tear up a few trees in pre-season as a right back, and particularly with everything that's going on around Nico Williams. I'd be interested to see sort of the extra motivation for him and for Conor.
Sure, worry on him, he's not the biggest. Is that, we had a bit of a chat about it, yeah, just, it could be a bit too soon.
A little bit, yeah, but I think this is the sort of opportunity where he will get his first taste of first team action, and I'm interested to see how he responds to that. The midfield lads as well, obviously Leighton Clarkson gets a few games last season, but he's always sort of paired together with Jake Kane, so I'd be interested to see whether him and Jake Kane get a bit of action together in the midfield. But it would just be nice to sort of see a few of them in and around the first team, because it's such a young like academy crop that Liverpool have got at the moment as well, so it feels so far removed from past years when we've had lads kicking around who are older than some of the genuine first team players. These are a group of lads who are much, much younger, so it would be exciting to see a few of them get a run out there.
For you, Elliot, obviously, the one thing every single pre-season photo where I see Salah, I just think he looks incredible. Like, he looks like sunshine comes the from arms. Him. The arms. I mean, as a man in the field.
I wouldn't embarrass myself, honestly. I mean, he looks unreal. He looks absolutely unreal. The Harvey Elliott one's interesting because he's getting a lot of talk about it because it's clear that he's got a, you know, a lot of ability. And it was nice to see kind of Klopp talk about taking that next step and stuff. You just wonder whether, you know, it might be a year too soon in terms of seeing him impact a lot of Liverpool games. You know, I think he will get minutes, but it'll be interesting to see how he develops. I always think with Harvey Elliott, will he learn his trade out wide a little bit, but then eventually just come inside? Because one thing he maybe does lack is the pace in terms of a wide forward. He hasn't quite got that blister and pace that maybe gets you away. Now, he looks a clever enough footballer to kind of, you know, maybe get round the fact he hasn't got loads and loads of pace. But that's what makes me think, will there be a shift at some point when he becomes maybe slightly more central as he starts to develop over his career? We don't know yet. Obviously, the centre-half thing's really interesting because you just want to see those lads playing football again and see them on the green pitch. And that gives you a little bit of a, you know, a bit of a bright spark to think that they may be getting really close to being able to start the first game. Virgil, obviously the big one. But it does sound like Matip's ahead of Virgil and Gomez. So I think it was rumoured to maybe miss out on a couple of training sessions due to...
I think that was... With Matip, I think one of the things about this is that Gomez and Van Dijk have really bad injuries. With Matip, it felt like an accumulation of lots of bad shit happening. And then he breaks down on Christmas... on Boxing Day, and it never quite looks the same. I do wonder whether or not in the end Ian, they sort of looked at Matip and felt, well, we could get him fit for the first week of May, but it's touch and go. But yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wondered if he was always likely to be that bit closer.
Possibly, and maybe that's, you know, maybe that's where you end up landing for the first game. Maybe it is Matip and Konate, and I know people will want to obviously see Virgil back sooner rather than later, but there's no doubt they've got to handle Gomez and Virgil with kid gloves a little bit. They can't be rushing them back because we've seen it before with other players. You've had serious injuries, and Matip's had his first year as well, but they can end up having other injuries as a result of overcompensating because they're worried about the knee and stuff. So they've got to take real care with those footballers. We know that. I think the other one I'm interested in seeing as well is Curtis, because
yeah,
I think there was a lot of chat about Jones last season, and I really like the player, I have to say, and I think he's an interesting one because a lot of people talk him up and a lot of people talk him down, and probably the truth somewhere in the middle. He's got loads and loads of ability, and we know he's an off-the-cuff player, but you could see signs last season that Liverpool were maybe just trying to transition him into something else. And you've seen Wijnaldum leave the club, and you start to think, well, what is his pathway to the first team now? Is it that more flair player that plays slightly further forward, Or is it the guy who maybe is a little bit more controlling and they're trying to maybe phase him into something like that? And you see it a number of times last season. Don't get me wrong, you do see the flicks and the flare at times, but you do see a lot of that careful, that control, that caution with the football as well. That's clearly been drilled into him by the coaching staff, that we want you to look after the football, lad. You've got to look after the football. Yep. You want to be part of this team, you've got to look after that football. So that's definitely a thing. So I'm really intrigued to see where Curtis goes down in terms of his path.
Just on this, what I feel with Curtis last season is, I think they arguably had, I mean, they obviously didn't just have two paths with them, but you know, for the sake of arguments, they either had the go and express yourself, lads, and we'll worry about it later and we'll show you the video, or they had the we're giving you a really solid base to play football from. And I feel as though, you know, not so similar to in lots of walks of life, what they've done, I feel, is they've given them the really solid base. Yeah. And what I actually expect to see more of is I expect to see the really solid base, but I expect to see more of the tricks, more of the flicks, more of the goals, more of the knowing when to break forward, when to have 5 minutes where you're not the responsible midfielder, but you're the one who's going to go make it happen. That's what I'm expecting to see from Curtis. That's what I think they've tried to do for him, is give him the base so he can be 7 out of 10. I'm expecting to see a few more nines.
Yeah, I think that's really fair. And I think, you know, there's obviously a pathway into this Liverpool team, but we know the manager, especially in the middle of the park, and that's why we talk about Henderson and stuff, and the kind of, you know, the kind of stress it can have on your body. He expects so much from his midfielders.
Yeah.
And I think he'll have had a conversation with Curtis to say to him, this is your pathway into the team. And yes, there will be opportunities to do some of the other stuff where, you know, you're pinging him in the top bin against Everton. There is that opportunity and it will come. And there will be games where we'll use it in a slightly different way. But if you want to get into this team on a fairly regular basis, this is how we're going to want to use you, and you're going to have to be responsible at times, and you're going to have to maybe go against the grain a little bit in terms of what your instinct's telling you, and look after the ball a little bit better, and maybe give it simple and then go. So I'm really intrigued to see how Curtis progresses over the next 12 months.
Last one, Gareth, last one for the show is Oxlade-Chamberlain. As much as there is the jokes around the Lallana thing and all of that sort of stuff, for me, I'm pleased Ian's mentioned Curtis, but it's a career defining season for Oxlade-Chamberlain, I think. And I mean that with all the warmth in my heart. I don't mean it like, you know, you're trying to set him up to fail or anything like that. It's this idea for me that if he wants to be a player who plays regularly in massive football matches that define where trophies go, this is the season where I feel as though he's got to prove that. It's not about contracts. It's not about anything else. It's about his body, and it's about how he can apply himself in these matches.
Yeah, he's done a bit of media, hasn't he? And obviously he's joked around about the Bobby role and all that kind of stuff, and people bringing up his goal at the end of the season, which was a cracker. But what was interesting in all of that was that he was saying himself that he was fit. Because I know me and you talked a lot on shows last season about, well, why isn't it coming on? Why is he not getting 15 or 20? Like, what's the score here? Like, and I think we all presumed, well, just not fit enough maybe or whatever. But he said in that interview he's done, I was fit, I was available, for a long time. And he just doesn't get the minutes, does he? I think he's averaging about 16 minutes on the pitch for each of his appearances or something like that, I read, which is obviously disappointing for a player of his calibre. So, yeah, you're absolutely right that he'll be looking to find a role for himself. It's interesting that, you know, equally in the, you know, they're talking about him doing bits, you know, as a false nine or whatever and all this, and yet he's saying in the same interview, I want to play in midfield.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's fairly clear on what he wants to do, but what does the staff want to do with him? What does the manager want to do with him? And do those two things align longer term? And yet you're right, I think he's got to make an impact in the season coming, or otherwise it's going to be time for him to move on.
It feels like when you say he's got to do an impact in the season coming, just to sort of round it off, I think he's got to make an impact from Tuesday night, or at least from Friday. Yeah. He's got to be making an impact today in training. For me, that's where the impact is. It starts now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And look, he's a senior player, isn't he, ultimately? And he's not on a small wage. He's, you know, he's got a big history in the game, all the rest of it. He's done good stuff for Liverpool as well. Let's not forget that. And look, a decent lad as well. You get the idea that he's a proper pro behind the scenes and stuff like that. And clearly someone who looks at the psychology of the game, he's literally using terminology that psychologists use about, like, living in the now and living in the moment and forgetting about what's gone on in the past. So, you know, it's clear he's working on both mental and physical sides of his games to try and have an impact. So, yeah, he has got to have an impact, because there's a lot of people vying for those positions, vying to even be the first off the bench and things like that. And that's where he needs to be at very soon.
Excellent stuff indeed. Thank you very much for listening to the Anfield Wrap this week. More to come, as I say, around all those games, plus the transfer stuff as it does develop, both for Liverpool and across the whole of the market. Next season is a lot closer than you think. Come and enjoy it with us. It's a whole new journey for this Liverpool side, but it's a journey that we're all used to, and that's what we're in it for, the idea that Liverpool can reclaim the Premier League title and win the Champions League. That's the job that's in front of this side, and it's the job that we're looking forward to describing for you. It's the Anfield Wrap, telling the story, supporting Liverpool from the heart of the city. Sign up, download the app, theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe. We'll see you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.